Imagine like a single software update deploying from some server farm in Texas, just a routine patch. Nothing malicious at all.
Right, just standard maintenance.
Exactly. But within, say, 45 minutes, algorithmic trading platforms detect this tiny microsecond routing delay in global communications.
And those algorithms immediately panic.
Yeah, they automatically hedge their risk by pausing agricultural commodity futures, and then that pause triggers an automated freeze in maritime hitching insurance,
Wow.
which instantly grounds cargo vessels in ports from Rotterdam to Shanghai. Suddenly, a single line of code in Texas has literally choked off the physical supply of essential goods globally.
It sounds totally fictional.
I know it sounds like a dystopian novel, right?
Yeah.
But that is the very real architecture of the world we are operating in right now.
It really is the ultimate manifestation of not seeing the forest for the trees. I mean, if you're standing there staring at the grounded cargo ship, you probably think it's a maritime issue.
Sure, or a union strike or something.
Exactly. Or if you look at the stock market, you think it's a financial glitch,
Yeah.
but you completely miss the entire invisible interconnected ecosystem that actually drove the failure.
Which is exactly what we are stepping back to examine today. So I want to formally welcome you, our listener, on behalf of the Great Awakening Report, to this deep dive into the Truth Seekers Weekly Briefing Subscriber Q&A for the week of June 19th.
Is a phenomenal stack of questions this week.
It really is. Today is basically a masterclass in connecting the dots. We're pulling from these incredible subscriber questions to look past the, isolated daily panic and decode the actual signals and mechanisms driving global events.
The briefing actually opens with a quote that serves as the perfect anchor for this specific conversation. It says, "In a world clouded by distraction and deception, true power lies in seeing the bigger picture." Yeah, and that's our mission here. We're analyzing these subscriber questions to help you navigate this period of accelerated change. And to do it with sharp discernment, observer consciousness, and actionable wisdom, rather than operating from this state of constant manufactured fear.
Okay, let's unpack this architecture we just described. Because a recurring theme from the subscribers is that everything seems chaotic and unrelated, yet somehow intrinsically linked.
Right, they feel the connection even if they can't see it.
Yes, we're looking at what the researchers in this report call the age of compression. We used to have separate silos, energy, finance, communications, agriculture. Now the boundaries between them have completely dissolved.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we're really talking about is the concept of tight coupling in complex systems.
Tight coupling, okay.
Yeah, modern civilization has essentially traded resilience for hyper-efficiency. When systems are loosely coupled, a failure in one area, say, a local power grid, it stays local. The slack in the system acts as the shock absorber.
Like having a spare tire.
Exactly. But in the age of compression, that slack has been completely engineered out to maximize profit and speed. Digital networks, AI processing centers, global supply chains, fractional reserve banking, they're all tightly coupled now.
So a stressor in one node immediately transmits kinetic energy into the next.
Instantaneously.
Yes. I want to push on that mechanism a bit. We often hear comparisons to a game of Jenga.
Right, the classic analogy.
But like that implies the tower is static until someone pulls a block. It feels more like an engine running at 10,000 RPMs where the oil has been drained to make the car lighter.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
It goes incredibly fast, right up until the pistons just fuse together. The tension isn't just about things breaking, it's the fact that our capability to do incredible things like instant global satellite internet via Starlink is permanently chained to our absolute dependency on those systems, never ever experiencing a hiccup.
And that tension is the defining pattern of our time. I mean, the paradox of the age of compression is that our tools are simultaneously omnipotent and extraordinarily fragile.
Which is terrifying when you really think about it.
It is, and this requires a fundamental shift in how you process the news. When you read a headline about massive energy demands from new AI data centers, your immediate thought shouldn't just be about electricity bills going up.
Right.
It should be a systems-level analysis.
Right.
Like, how does redirecting baseload power to AI facilities impact the stability of the grid that supports regional water purification
Right.
or automated logistics?
It changes everything. But if the underlying systems are so tightly coupled and operating totally without a safety net, it begs an obvious question. And this is one that many subscribers brought up in the Q&A.
Yeah, question two.
Right. Why does the surface of everyday life still look so normal? I mean, if the engine is running without oil, why hasn't the car exploded yet?
Well, because we are in the middle of a systemic transition, not a single apocalyptic event. Societal reorganizations rarely happen as a sudden thunderclap. They're tectonic.
Like plates shifting.
Exactly. The friction happens miles beneath the surface, while the ground above remains perfectly still until it isn't. Right now, what is happening is the temporary coexistence of multiple overlapping realities.
But wait, I struggle with this framing a bit.
Okay, how so?
Well, if old systems and new decentralized technologies are just operating side by side, isn't that just standard technological progression?
You mean like past industrial revolutions?
Yeah. When the internal combustion engine was invented, you had horse-drawn carriages sharing the road with Model T Fords for, what, a couple of decades?
Mm-hmm.
What makes this current transition any different from standard historical progress?
This raises an important point, and the difference lies in the breadth and the velocity of the paradigm shift. The transition to the automobile changed transportation. What we're experiencing right now is a simultaneous replacement of our financial architecture, our information distribution, our institutional trust mechanisms, and our physical infrastructure.
It's everything all at once.
It is happening all at once. Look at how these realities overlap in a way that creates extreme sociological friction. You have centralized legacy banking systems, SWIFT, fiat currency, traditional lending, operating in the exact same economic space as decentralized ledger technologies, smart contracts, and tokenized assets.
We're totally seeing that friction in real time.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be a freelancer getting paid globally in cryptocurrency, completely bypassing traditional banks.
Right.
But you still have to convert that back into fiat currency to pay your local property taxes. You're forced to straddle two completely contradictory architectures.
Precisely. Or consider communications.
Yeah.
Legacy telecommunication grids are highly centralized and very vulnerable to macro-level manipulation or just localized physical failure.
Like cell towers going down in a storm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Concurrently, you have the rapid expansion of mesh networks and low-Earth orbit satellite arrays. You could literally have a scenario where the legacy cellular network in a major city goes completely dark due to a power infrastructure failure.
But a neighbor with a solar-powered Starlink terminal maintains global high-speed access.
Yes. The friction comes from the fact that our laws, our cultural habits, and our economic dependencies are still anchored to the old reality, while the functional capability has already moved to the new one.
That overlap totally explains the underlying anxiety so many people feel. Your daily routine, driving to work, going to the grocery store, it looks identical to how it did 5 years ago. But the foundation holding that routine up is vibrating at a totally different frequency.
And that vibration is the sound of institutional decay. As the legacy systems lose their monopoly on efficiency, they often grip tighter, trying to force compliance within their crumbling architecture.
Which brings us to the cognitive battlefield of this transition. If we are forced to straddle these two parallel realities, figuring out which signals are real and which are institutional artifacts becomes incredibly difficult.
It's the biggest challenge right now.
Subscribers are pointing out the sheer exhaustion of navigating information overload, especially with AI entering the chat.
Well, information overload is actually an outdated term at this point.
Really?
Yeah, it implies the problem is just volume. We're dealing with something far more insidious, which the report highlights as the crisis of discernment in the algorithmic age.
Mm.
We have moved past an era where institutions simply hid the truth. Now they obscure it by flooding the zone.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We used to think of finding the truth like panning for gold. You dig through a mountain of dirt, and the real labor is just finding the river.
Right. The effort was in the search.
But today, the AI-driven information ecosystem isn't just a rushing river of dirt and water. It is a system generating synthetic camouflage. The algorithmic models aren't just producing noise.
No, they are producing targeted noise.
They are capable of generating fool's gold that is molecularly identical to the real thing, specifically tailored to your psychological biases.
The synthetic camouflage is exactly the mechanism at play here. And it is driven by algorithmic feedback loops. These platforms map your digital behavior, identify the specific cadence of information that triggers your nervous system, and then autonomously generate or elevate content that perfectly matches that signature.
So it learns what stares you.
It absolutely does. The danger for someone researching alternative narratives isn't that they can't find information. It's that the algorithm recognizes they are looking for alternative narratives and immediately traps them in a bespoke counter-institutional echo chamber.
Oh, wow.
It feeds them increasingly extreme or distorted alternative facts designed solely to harvest their engagement.
So discernment is no longer about just finding a non-mainstream source, because the non-mainstream source might be an AI hallucination designed just to keep you clicking. It requires an entirely new chemical test for the truth.
What's fascinating here is how the June 19th report defines the mechanics of that new discernment. It is the ability to decouple the data from the emotional hook delivering it.
That sounds difficult.
It is, but true discernment requires you to analyze the structural intent of the information.
Mm.
You have to ask yourself, what behavioral outcome is this piece of media trying to provoke? Is it trying to induce panic, apathy, or a feeling of helplessness?
Right.
If the information, regardless of whether it claims to be mainstream or alternative, is designed to deregulate your nervous system, it's part of the synthetic camouflage.
If the goal of the information ecosystem is to constantly deregulate our nervous systems, human biology dictates that we are just going to burn out.
We already are seeing it.
We cannot sustain high-level executive function if our amygdala is being hijacked every 20 minutes by a new headline. How do researchers and subscribers physically survive this cognitive load?
This is exactly why there is such a pronounced shift in the truth-seeking community away from chasing specific predictions and timelines and toward cultivating what is called the observer mindset.
Okay, question four.
Right. In highly complex, tightly coupled systems, predicting specific outcomes is mathematically impossible. When you anchor your psychological stability to a prediction waiting for a specific political event, an economic collapse, or some disclosure timeline, and it doesn't materialize, you experience profound cognitive fatigue.
Let me stop you right there because I have to play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
The observer mindset sounds highly problematic to me. I struggle with this concept because it sounds suspiciously like a philosophical excuse for apathy.
I hear that a lot.
I mean, if everyone realizes the Jenga tower is fragile and just sits back to observe the decay to protect their own peace, doesn't that passivity just accelerate the collapse? How is observing not just giving up?
That is a critical distinction to make,
yeah.
And it's a very common trap. The observer mindset, when applied correctly, is the exact opposite of apathy. It is the ultimate act of sovereignty.
Yes.
Apathy is checking out because you feel powerless. Observation is stepping out of the emotional meat grinder so you can actually deploy your power effectively. Remember what we just discussed about synthetic camouflage.
The algorithms harvesting engagement.
Right. The algorithmic systems are designed to harvest your kinetic energy through outrage and fear. When you react immediately to a provocative narrative, you are actively participating in the control mechanism. You are letting the narrative architect dictate your heart rate and your focus.
You're literally donating your cognitive bandwidth to the machine.
Exactly. The neurobiology of fear is such that when you are in a state of hyperarousal, your brain physically routes blood flow away from the prefrontal cortex, the area responsible for logic, planning, and long-term strategy.
And dumps it into the amygdala for a fight or flight response.
Yes. The observer mindset is a tactical discipline. By maintaining emotional neutrality, you are literally protecting your brain's ability to plan. You observe the pieces moving on the geopolitical or economic chessboard without letting the movement hijack your central nervous system.
That makes profound sense when you frame it biologically. It's not about ignoring the rushing river. It's about refusing to jump into the rapids just because the water is loud.
Exactly. You stand on the bank, map the currents, and decide where to build a bridge.
It's moving from, I need to know exactly what happens next, to I am cognitively and physically prepared to handle whatever happens next.
Which brings us perfectly to the practical application of all this. The final major theme from the subscribers was a demand for actionable focus.
Question five.
Right. If we're observing this systemic transition, what should we actually be doing as we move through 2026? And the answer the report provides is deeply grounded. Prioritize localized resilience over global prediction.
If the tightly coupled global systems are fragile, the logical response is to build loosely coupled local systems.
Yes. You decentralize your own life. The report outlines specific, tangible vectors. Take financial resilience. Instead of just trying to predict macro inflation rates, focus on reducing personal debt and cultivating skills that hold intrinsic value outside of digital structures.
Tangible skills.
Right. Then there's physical health. In an era where medical supply chains are subject to the same systemic fragilities we discussed earlier, maintaining baseline metabolic health is your primary defense.
And local community connections. This is where the overlapping realities become incredibly practical.
How do you mean?
Well, you might have a Starlink dish and access to a decentralized crypto wallet, but if the local grid goes down and the global supply chain halts, Algorithms can't chop wood.
No, they cannot.
And digital tokens can't fix a ruptured water line. Knowing the actual human beings living within a 2-mile radius of you who has agricultural skills, who understands mechanical engineering, who has medical training, that physical mesh network is the ultimate bypass to macrosystem failure.
That is the essence of building parallel infrastructure.
Yeah.
You aren't trying to tear down the legacy system. You are simply making it irrelevant to your immediate survival.
Which takes back the power.
Exactly. Building local trust networks requires zero permission from any institution. It operates entirely outside the algorithmic control grid. And crucially, it requires the very emotional regulation and discernment we've been discussing. You cannot build a high-trust local community if you are constantly vibrating with manufactured political anxiety.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? To me, the narrative arc of this entire Q&A report is a blueprint for empowerment. It forcibly evicts you from the waiting room.
I love that phrasing.
You don't have to wait for a political savior to fix the macroeconomy, or a technological breakthrough to secure the grid, or a grand disclosure event to validate your perspective. The architecture of your sovereignty can be built right now, this afternoon, in your own neighborhood, and in your own mind.
If we synthesize the layers of this deep dive, the trajectory is very clear. We are navigating an age of compression, where complex systems are tightly coupled and highly fragile. To manage the inevitable failures of these systems, we are undergoing a massive transition where centralized legacy structures are grinding against decentralized alternatives. The institutions managing the old reality are deploying algorithmic synthetic camouflage to maintain control of your attention.
And your defense against this is the observer mindset.
Yes, tactical emotional regulation that preserves your cognitive bandwidth. And you use that bandwidth to build tangible, localized resilience.
It is a profound evolution of what it actually means to be a truth seeker. It's no longer about hoarding esoteric facts. It's about integrating those facts into a grounded, resilient lifestyle.
The awakening process is maturing. We are moving from the acquisition of data to the embodiment of wisdom. It is about meeting an unpredictable, rapidly accelerating future with presence, adaptability, and clarity.
And that word wisdom feels like the true signal hidden in all this noise. Which leaves me with a final thought for you to chew on. We spend so much time analyzing the implications of artificial intelligence, how it can optimize supply chains, generate endless media, and even synthesize consensus reality.
Right. AI is fundamentally conquering the domain of raw information and logic. But if machines are achieving absolute perfection in data processing and algorithmic prediction, maybe the core objective of this era isn't to outcompute the machines or obsessively decode every hidden data point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the true great awakening is the stark realization that the only domains left untouched by artificial perfection are deeply exclusively human. Our capacity for emotional sovereignty, our physical courage, our moral intuition, and our ability to look a neighbor in the eye and build localized trust. What if, in a world dominated by synthetic intelligence and fragile global architecture, your unreplicable humanity is the most advanced technology you possess?